Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
The presenter for this session, Dr. Srikumar Rao. Dr. Rao is an elite coach for persons seeking spiritual growth who also want to leave an outsized impact on the world. Dr. Rao is the author of Are You Ready to Succeed? And Unconventional Strategies for Achieving Personal Mastery in Business and Life. And he is a TED speaker whose TED Talk has been viewed by millions of people on several different platforms. So Dr. Rao, if you would like to start your video. We can't see you quite yet, but go ahead and start your video. Yes, take it away. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Good morning, good evening, good night, depending on which part of the world you are. It is my absolute pleasure to be with you today. And Sarah mentioned, my topic is going to be how can you absolutely completely, utterly eradicate stress. And by the way, that was not a title chosen at random. You really can get rid of stress. I'm not talking about reduce it considerably. I'm talking about getting rid of it altogether. And you can also cultivate extreme resilience. Resilience, of course, is our ability to bounce back from adversity. Extreme resilience is when you bounce back so fast that an external observer might not even know that you had suffered a setback. So that's a pretty bold promise. So let's see if I can deliver. Let me tell you how I'm going to be doing it. The only way you can really get rid of stress and really cultivate extreme resilience is by thinking differently, thinking radically differently. The notion of thinking differently, by the way, is something that you have been exposed to. And not only have you been exposed to it, but you embrace the idea. How many of you, for example, have been told that you ought to see the glass as half full rather than half empty? Or every problem is an opportunity in disguise, or the darkest hour is before the dawn? So yes, you're familiar with the notion of thinking differently. You embrace the idea. But despite that, most of us have considerable difficulty in consistently thinking differently. And the reason is most of us try to think differently by trying to think differently. It does not work. What I'm going to share with you is a proven methodology by which you examine the mental models that you hold, which cause you to view the world in a particular manner. And as you start making changes in those models, you literally become a different person. When you become a different person, you don't have to think about thinking differently. It happens automatically. You think differently and you behave differently. So that's the process. So if you really want to eliminate stress, here's what you've got to do. I'm sorry, this was too good an opportunity for me to pass up. I have asked thousands of people on six continents, do you have stress in your life? And most of them said that there is more stress in their life than ever before. So of course I asked them, why do you feel you have stress in your life? And they came up with dozens of factors, dozens of reasons why they feel stressed, and I was able to boil them into 8 major factors, and I'm about to share them with you. The first is financial. I don't have enough. I have expenses due, kids' college tuitions, mortgage payments, business expansion plans, and for whatever reason, I don't seem to have enough cash to fulfill all of those. So there are a little too few zeros in my bank account balance, and that bothers me. Relationships, typically with partner or spouse, but could be with children, siblings, relatives, in-laws, bosses, customers, you name it. You'd like them to be harmonious, you'd like them to progress in the manner that you would like them to, but it's just not happening the way you would want it to happen. Children, what are children? Children are bundles of joy sent to bring meaning to your life. But children do the darndest things and they begin early. They poop right after you change them. They grow up and they drop out of school. They fall in love with the most inappropriate people. So yes, children are bundles of joy, but they can add considerably to the stress in your life. Business and career, given your talent, given your smarts, you would like to be at a certain position in your journey of life, but you're not at that position. It's not working out the way you would like it to or the way you envisioned it to be. Health. I don't think there's too much that I need to say about that in these coronavirus days. But it's not only your own health we're talking about. Many of you have parents and elderly relatives, and there's stuff like dementia and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's floating around. So your health or the health of those close to you could be a cause for concern. Then there's the big external stuff, politics, climate, crime, animal welfare, take your pick. All you have to do is catch the opening minutes of a news broadcast or the headlines of any newspaper, and you'll know what we're talking about. And how about this one? How many of you feel that there's too much to do and you don't have enough time to do it all? And last but not least, I'm not where I want to be. When you were graduating school, when you were graduating college, you had a rosy vision of your life and how your life is going to work out. And it's not working out the way you would have liked it to. So these are the reasons why people say they feel stress in their lives. And I'm pretty sure that one or more of these factors is the reason that you believe there is stress in your life. Remember, I said earlier in my talk that part of my challenge today is to get you to think differently. Well, we're going to begin now. And I would like you to consider the fact that that's not true. Those are not the reasons you feel stress. There is one reason and only one reason you feel stress. Let me repeat that. The factors that I listed earlier are not the reason why you feel stress in your life. There is one reason and only one reason you feel stress in your life. And that is that you have a rigid idea of this is how the universe should be, and the universe is not playing ball with you. In your view of the universe, you should be flush, abundant with cash, you should have a certain number of zeros in your bank account, and you don't. In your vision of the universe, your relationships should be harmonious and your spouse should be loving, but your spouse has already consulted a divorce lawyer. Your business should be flourishing, your career should be going strong with promotions around the corner, but it's not happening the way you want. Whichever way you look at it, you think the universe should be unfolding in the way you would like it to, and the universe is not unfolding the way you would like it to, and you resist it, and you resent it. And in that resistance and resentment, you create stress in your life. And that's the only reason you have stress in your life. It takes some time for you to get your arms around this, but I invite you to consider this because it's really important. Let's carry on with the process of thinking differently. I will readily admit that you probably don't think of your life in this manner, but I now invite you to think of your life in this manner. Your entire life has been nothing but a ceaseless attempt, a ceaseless quest to have control over some part of your internal or external environment. Let me repeat that. Your entire life has been nothing but an attempt to have control over some part of your internal or external environment. Why are you on this call today? Well, you're on this call today because you heard what the topic was and said, gee, maybe I'll have some good tips and I can implement that and I'll have less stress in my life and that'll be good. It was an attempt to control some part of your internal or external environment. Are you married? Why did you get married? You got married because you saw this person of the same sex or opposite sex, depending upon your predisposition, and you felt good, and you thought, gee, you know, if you get hitched, then there's going to be love and companionship and great sex, and it seems like a good thing, so let me push it along. And so you got married. It was an attempt to control some part of your internal or external environment. Everything but everything you do is an attempt to control some part of your internal or external environment. And I mean everything. If you scratch your nose, it's because you think the itch will go away. It's an attempt to control some part of your internal or external environment. I will readily admit you probably don't think of your life in this manner, but I invite you now to think of your life in this manner. And I have some good news for you. You do not have control. Gets better. You never had control. Gets still better. You never will have control. The only thing you have is the illusion of control. Control is a myth. It does not exist. The illusion of control comes about because many times in your life, you were in position A, you wanted to go to position B, and you said, if I do X, Y, and Z, I'll get from A to B, and you did X, Y, and Z, and you did get from A to B. And this has happened many times in your life and the lives of people around you whom you know. So you said, see, I did it. I have control. In reality, what happened is any of a number of things that could have happened to derail you did not happen. So be grateful. Be immensely grateful. But do not think you have control. Because in your life, many times things have happened that were so totally unexpected that they threw all of your plans into a cocked hat. We're facing a major such event right now with coronavirus. Would you have imagined 1 year ago that you would be restricted from going out? I am a tennis fanatic. You know, I've been to all of the Grand Slams except Wimbledon. This was the year we were going to go to Wimbledon. So I bought tickets last year and they cost a fortune. Wimbledon tickets are not an expense, they're a capital expenditure. And at that time, if somebody said, Srikumar, you're not going to be able to see Wimbledon this year, I would have said possibly, but in my head would be some thought like perhaps somebody fell ill as a result of which I could not travel. I would never have imagined that I would not go to Wimbledon because the tournament was canceled and there would be no planes flying from New York to London. You do not have control. Control is a myth. The only thing you have is an illusion of control. Let me tell you, by the way, the illusion of control is a fantastic thing. I'm not knocking it. The illusion of control is what makes you get up in the morning, make plans, lay out strategic objectives, try to execute on them. It's wonderful. All of your current success is due to the illusion of control. So I'm not knocking the illusion of control, but I am saying use the illusion of control, knowing that it is the illusion of control, and it will break down in your life at some point. Not will it break down, but when will it break down? So if you use the illusion of control, knowing that it is the illusion of control, you simply say, this is the time it breaks down, what do I do now? But if you use the illusion of control without knowing that it is the illusion, that's when you go to pieces. Okay, so given the truth about control that you never had it and never will, how can you eliminate stress and cultivate extreme resilience? In order to answer that, I have to share a few concepts with you, and I'll get to that right now. And the first and most important concept is mental chatter. Mental chatter is an internal monologue that you have going on in your head all the time. Begins when you get up in the morning, is with you throughout the day. In fact, it's with you right now. And out of courtesy, you ought to be listening to my chatter instead of your chatter. I have been speaking now for, approximately 12 minutes. And how many of you in that time have already gone somewhere else to what are the important things you have to get done, and gee, I'm hungry, and do I have time for a quick phone call? Oh, Dran, I forgot that errand. I rest my case. Mental chatter is like an unwelcome relative who's shown up at your house and you can't kick him out. So you live your life as best you can despite your mental chatter. You suppress it, you ignore it, you work around it. You do the best you can. Big mistake. The reason it's a big mistake is you actually construct your life with your mental chatter. You think you live in a real world, you don't. You live in a construct, and you made that construct. You created that construct with your mental chatter and your mental models, which we'll be getting to very shortly. We're all living in the matrix, but this is not a matrix created by an alien civilization out to enslave us. This is a matrix that you created with your mental chatter. This parable of the second arrow is one of the more powerful teachings of the Buddha. The Buddha asked his follower Ananda, Ananda, if an arrow were to hit you in the arm, would it not be very painful? Ananda nodded his head, yes, Lord, it would be very painful. And if a second arrow were to hit you exactly where the first arrow hit you, would it not be even more painful? Yes, Lord, it would be even more painful. Then the Buddha had a surprising question. Why then do you shoot the second arrow? And I noticed some of you looking puzzled, so let me tell you a story which explains this. There was a woman, and she was a good mother, and her son turned 16, and he got his provisional driver's license. And one day he comes up to his mother and says, hey, Mom, I'm getting together with a bunch of my friends, and can I take the car? The mother said, of course not. You just have a provisional license. You're not a very good driver. Where do you have to go? I'll drop you. He says, no, Mom, you don't understand. I have to go alone. You can't be there, and I have to take the car. It's really important for me that I take the car, and it's really important that you not be there. The mother said, no. You know, if I can't drop you and I shouldn't be there, there's Uber, there's Lyft, what would you like? He said, no, Mom, you don't understand. You should not be there, and I also have to take the car. It's really important. And he begged and he pleaded and he wheedled, and you know how children are, and bit by bit the mother felt herself giving way, and she took promises, you're not going to drink anything, no alcohol, and you're going to call, yes, and you'll be back by 10 o'clock, of course. So reluctantly she gives him the car keys. And of course, once he gets the keys, he forgets all about his promises, he has too many beers, on the way back he gets into a serious accident and has to be operated on immediately, and his mother is in the hospital with him, and when he's wheeled to the recovery room, she dashes home to have a quick shower so she can change and go back to the hospital, and at that time her friend calls. And her friend says, how could you possibly have let him take the car? You're not a mother, you're a murderer. You're probably shocked that a friend would say something like that at this critical time, but you'd probably be less shocked if I said it wasn't what her friend said, it's what she told herself. That is the second arrow. It's bad enough being in a situation where her son is injured and is recovering, but telling herself that she's an inadequate mother and a murderer, does it make things any better? Obviously not. But we do it all the time. That is the second arrow. And the important thing for you to know is that the second arrow is always delivered by means of mental chatter. Let me repeat that. The second arrow is always delivered by means of mental chatter. Look back on your life and any situation which is troubling you right now, and I will wager that your mental chatter about that situation is making it at least an order of magnitude worse. For persons who attend my programs and for my coaching clients, if I could get them to stop at the second arrow, they'd be wonderfully well off. In most cases, they're already up to the 5th, 6th, and 200th arrows. A mental model is a notion we have that this is the way the world works. And we've got dozens of models. We've got a model for how do I get a job? We've got a model for how do I get ahead in the job that I got? We've got a model for how do I find a person to marry? We've got a model for how do I bring up my children? We've got dozens of models, maybe hundreds of models. Some of these models may be in conflict with each other, and we may or may not be aware of the conflict. The problem is not that we have mental models. Mental models are wonderful things. They help you make sense of unstructured situations. They save you time. The problem is not that we have mental models. The problem is that we're not aware we have mental models. We think this is the way the world works, but this is not the way the world works. This is our model of this is the way the world works. And the more you believe in it, the more evidence you seem to get that this, in fact, is the way the world works. And very soon you built a silo around yourself that's so fake, it's almost impossible to break out of. So to illustrate this, let me try a thought experiment. Now, this is a thought experiment. So the only way it's going to work is for you not just to listen to me, but to actually put yourself in the situation which I'm about to outline to you. Got that, everybody? So here's the situation. You're going to a meeting, and it's an important meeting. You're driving, you're running late, you're stuck in a massive traffic jam. It's a really hot day and the air conditioning in your car is not working. Everybody got that? Don't just listen to me, put yourself in the situation I'm outlining. You're going to an important meeting, you're driving, you're running late, you're stuck in a massive traffic jam, it's a really, really hot day and your air conditioning is not working. And all of a sudden, somebody cuts in front of you and almost causes an accident. What are your feelings towards the driver of that car? I'll bet that the feeling, your feelings towards the driver of that car are not those of loving kindness. Now, let me share some information. The driver of this car that cut you off and almost caused an accident, he'd received some disquieting news. His son was involved in a serious accident and has to be operated on immediately and is desperately trying to get to the hospital with no knowledge of whether or not he'll ever see his son alive again. Now, what happens when I share that information with you? In all likelihood, you can feel your rage, frustration, anger drain out of you palpably and leave you with a sense of compassion for a fellow human being. Now, you don't really know whether the guy who cut you off was an inconsiderate jerk or a distraught father, right? So here's what you're going to do. You're going to hire a private investigator to look into the matter and report back to you. And if the private investigator reports back to you that the guy was an inconsiderate jerk, he'll be really pissed off. But if the private investigator reports back to you that the guy was a distraught father, you'll feel great compassion. But until you know for sure, you're going to remain neutral. That's not what's going to happen. Odds are very good that none of the people on this call in circumstances such as I have outlined will ever hire a private investigator to look into the matter. That means that you'll never really know whether the guy who cut you off was a distraught father or inconsiderate jerk. But the more important point is it really doesn't matter. You had the choice of determining what is the emotional domain you occupy. Let me repeat that. You had the choice of determining what is the emotional domain you will occupy, and you made a decision to occupy that domain. In all likelihood, this happened so fast that you never even considered what I'm telling. But now that I have peeled back the layers, can you see that you had a choice and you made a decision? The reason you made the particular choice that you did and the particular decision that you did is because of the mental chatter that you entertain and the mental models that you hold. And the reason this is so crucially important is that you make such a decision, you reach such a juncture dozens of times every day, every day. And in many of these instances, perhaps the majority of them, you choose to occupy an emotional domain where you are anxious, worried, fearful, and you never recognize that this is a choice you had and a decision you made. That's how important these concepts are. We spend way too much time and emotional energy on the 2, 3, or 4 things that are wrong in our lives, of the 2, 3, or 4 things that we have arbitrarily decided are wrong in our life, and we completely ignore the 40, 50, or 200 things which are pretty darn good about our lives. Everybody who's on this call is incredibly privileged. Do you have to bother about whether you're going to have dinner tonight? Do you have a roof over your head? Do you have a bed to sleep in? You do recognize that any of these is a big deal in a big chunk of the world outside, right? Sure you do. So when I point it out to you, you say, yes, I am incredibly privileged. But the problem is you don't feel incredibly privileged. You feel stressed out and put upon. Why is that? That is because of where you shine your awareness of. Your awareness is like a flashlight. Let me repeat that. Your awareness is like a torch, a flashlight. What does a flashlight do? It lights up whatever you shine it on. Shine it on the floor, it lights up the floor. Shine it on the roof, it lights up the roof. Your awareness is exactly like that. Let me prove it to you. I want you right now to take the flashlight of your awareness and shine it on the chair in which you're sitting. Got it? Take the flashlight of your awareness and shine it on the chair in which you're sitting, and all of a sudden you become aware of the pressure of your buttocks on the chair, on the seat. You become aware of the fabric or the leather of the seat against the back of your thighs, right? 30 seconds ago, you were not aware of it, but now you're aware of it. Why is that? Because you've shone the flashlight of your awareness on it. So the many, many good things in your life, how come you don't notice them? It's because you don't shine the flashlight of your awareness on that. You shine the flashlight of your awareness on the 2, 3, or 4 things that are wrong in your lives, more precisely on the 2, 3, or 4 things that you have arbitrarily decided are wrong in your lives. And the many good things, they pass by unnoticed because you don't shine the flashlight of your awareness on that. Big mistake. Starting immediately, and I would say it's a good idea to begin this shortly before you go to bed, a few minutes before you go to bed. Shine the flashlight of your awareness on the many ways in which you're fortunate and truly blessed, and keep it there. Then go to bed. When you get up in the morning, don't go immediately to the space of, oh my God, there's too much to do and I don't have enough time to do it all. Shine the flashlight of your awareness on the many ways you're fortunate and blessed. And as you go through the day, constantly do that. It is my hope that you will eventually get to the point where your default emotional domain is that of appreciation and gratitude. And why is that important? That's important because when you're in the default emotional domain of appreciation and gratitude, you're not anxious, you're not scared, you're not fearful, you're not worried. The two cannot coexist. A few centuries ago, the Italian scientist Galileo got into a spot of trouble for declaring that perhaps the sun does not move around the earth, perhaps the earth moves around the sun. And every single one of you is convinced that Galileo got it wrong. The earth does not move around the sun. It revolves personally around you. And you really believe that. I'm not kidding here. I'm not joking. Think about how no matter what happens, you very quickly bring it down to what's the impact on me. Your partner gets a great job offer and you think, how is this going to affect our relationship? Your daughter drops out of high school to begin an in-depth exploration of controlled substances. And you say, what will they think about my parenting? And how much does rehab cost? And is it covered by insurance? No matter what happens in the world outside, we very quickly bring it down to what's the impact on me. We all live in a me-centered universe. And here's what I want to share with you. If that is where you predominantly live, if you spend your time in a me-centered universe, you are going to live, by and large, a mediocre existence, punctuated with flashes of pleasure, but essentially meaningless. If you'd like to get to the vision I have for you, where you wake up in the morning with your blood singing at the thought of being who you are, and when you're radiantly alive, if not throughout the entire day, at least for a big chunk of it, the only way you can do that is to find a cause which is bigger than you are, a cause which brings a greater good to a greater community, and you have tremendous flexibility in defining both the greater good and the greater community. And you subsume, if not your whole life, at least a big part of it to that, then you will break out. Ancient England, site of a great cathedral being constructed. An architect was moving to the site of construction. He came across three people, all of whom were doing the exact same thing. There was a big block of stone, and they put a smaller block of stone on top of the big block of stone and beat it with a hammer till it broke. And he asked the first guy, what are you doing? And he said, can't you see? I'm breaking rocks. Why are you doing that? Because I get paid a halfpenny a day. And the second person said, I'm helping build the wall behind me. And the third person said, I'm helping build a great cathedral. When it's done, people will come from all over the world and they will be inspired. And I will have had a small part to play in that. And the third person was the only one who recognized the architect and said, truth be told, I don't like doing it. It's backbreaking work and I can get better wages for less effort. I'm only doing it because I want to learn. Will you teach me to build a cathedral? And 20 years from that day, the person who was breaking rocks was dead. He no longer had strength to swing a hammer or a staff. The person who was helping build the wall behind him was living a life of desperate poverty. But the person who was helping build a cathedral was on his way to building his first cathedral. That's the choice each one of us has every day. We can get up in the morning and break rocks, so we can get up in the morning and help build a cathedral. I cannot define for you the cathedral that you are building. You are the only person who can do that. But I can tell you that unless you define the cathedral that you are building and anchor yourself in it, you are going to live a pretty mediocre existence. You have to live simultaneously at the 6-inch level and the 50,000 foot level. The 6-inch level is very important because that's where the work gets done. That's the level at which you decide, these are the phone calls I have to return, these are the emails I have to reply to, these are the tasks I have to get done today, very, very important. But if you spend all your time at the 6-inch level, you're going to get your nose upgraded. You have to simultaneously be at the 50,000 foot level where you look at the arc of your life and say, is this where I want to go? It's as if you were in an ocean liner in the middle of an ocean and you make a 1-degree course correction and it doesn't seem like much, but over the course of a 2-week voyage, you'll land up 100 miles different from where you would have been otherwise. There's something that we do, and we do it numerous times every day, and it's highly deleterious to your health, and we don't even recognize that we're doing it. And that's the habit we have of sticking a label on whatever event occurs to us. We label it good or we label it bad. Nothing is neutral. Everything is either slightly good or slightly bad. Now, I invite you to think of something. Whenever an event occurs, any event, it does not cause suffering. Suffering begins only at the instant you label it, this is bad, this is terrible, I cannot bear it. Let's say you got fired. Okay, you now have a lot of spare time. Maybe you even have the ability to look for a job you really like it, as opposed to the one you were in, which you didn't like all that much or even hated. But you got fired and say, oh my God, what's going to happen to me? I have mortgage payments to meet. I have my children's educational tuition to meet. This is terrible. And the moment you say this is terrible, at that instant, suffering begins. Suffering doesn't begin when an event occurs. Suffering begins at the instant you decide this event is terrible. Let me tell you a story. This comes from the Sufi tradition. There was a man and his son, and they lived in a beautiful valley, and they were very happy, but they were also very poor. And the man decided he was sick and tired of being poor, and he was going to become a rich man, and he decided he was going to become a rich man by breeding horses, and he bought a stallion. Didn't have enough money to buy a stallion, so he borrowed heavily from the neighbors. And the very day he got the stallion, it kicked the top bar loose from the paddock where he housed it and ran away. And the neighbors came around saying, you're going to become a rich man, but your stallion has run away. And you still owe us money. You are screwed. And the man shrugged his shoulder and said, good thing, bad thing, who knows? That stallion fell in with a group of wild horses, which were close to where the man lived. And he enticed them into the paddock, which he had repaired, so escape was no longer possible. So all of a sudden, he had the stallion back plus a dozen wild horses, which, by the standards of that village, made him a wealthy man. And the neighbors came around and said, we thought you were destitute, but fortune has smiled upon you. You have become a rich man. How lucky you are. And the man shrugged his shoulder and said, good thing, bad thing, who knows? The man and his son started to break the horses, and one of the horses threw the man's son and stomped on his leg, and it broke and it healed crooked. And the neighbors came around saying, he was such a fine young lad, and now he'll never be able to find a girl to marry him. How unfortunate. And the man shrugged his shoulder and said, good thing, bad thing, who knows? That summer, the king of the country declared war on a neighboring country, and press gangs moved through the villages, rounding up all the able-bodied young men to serve in the army. But this man's son was spared because he had a crooked leg, and the neighbors had tears in their eyes, and they came around. We don't know if we'll ever see our sons alive again, but you still have your son. How lucky you are. And the man shrugged his shoulders and said, good thing, bad thing, who knows? And it went on like that forever. Think about your own life. Can you imagine, can you recall any instance when something happened that at the time it happened, you thought this was terrible, but you can now look back upon it and say, that wasn't so terrible, or even that was good. I remember I was speaking before the Global Executive Summit of the Entrepreneurs Organization. This time, somebody in the back raised his hand and made a ruckus, so I had to acknowledge him. And he said, Professor Rao, I have a perfect example for you. He graduated from one of the top engineering schools in India, one of the IITs, and then did a degree, engineering degree from Stanford, got a job with a high-tech company, was looking forward to building his career. His friends got a job with other high-tech companies and they were looking forward to carrying on their friendship and building their careers. But he had an immigration problem as a result of which he had to leave the country. And he was devastated because, among other things, he had debt. And when you have student debt in dollars and you're earning in rupees, you're in a very bad place indeed. But he said, Professor Rao, as a result of my being forced to leave the country, I met this wonderful lady who's now my wife, and I teamed up with two of my engineering college buddies, and we started a company, and it's going gangbusters. All my clients are in America. I come to America at least 6 times a year. I have a picture-perfect life, and none of this would have happened if I had not been forced to leave the country. Can you recall any instance which you labeled bad and you can look back now on it and say it wasn't so bad or even it was good? If there were such instances in your own life, then why are you in a hurry to label something bad, something that's happened to you today? Can you visualize any scenario by which in X years this could actually turn out to be good? Merely asking yourself that question will move you to a different emotional domain. And if you then ask the next question, what is it that I can proactively do to actually make it good? And all of a sudden, you're moved from the realm of despair to the realm of possibility. That is how you become incredibly resilient. Here is how most of us tend to live our lives. We set a goal for ourselves. I set a goal for myself. I worked hard to achieve it. I succeeded. Life's a blast. Or I set a goal to myself, I worked very hard, I failed. Life sucks. We live our lives oscillating on a sinusoidal curve between elation and despair, and we spend more time at the despair end of the spectrum. It's a lousy way to live. There is an alternative. And the alternative is set a goal for yourself. But the goal is only important because it establishes direction. Once you've established the direction, forget about it. That's right, forget about the goal. Don't pay a second thought to it. Instead, pour all of your emotional energy into what are the actions that I have to undertake in order to meet the goal. The goal is only important because it establishes direction. When you obsess about the goal, the destination, you miss the journey, and the journey is the only thing you have. Let me repeat that. The destination is a mirage. You get there, you tarry a few minutes, and then you're off someplace else. The journey is with you always. The journey is the only thing you have. When you obsess about the destination, you miss the journey. You know, people talk about, I want to climb Mount Everest. How much time do you spend on top of Mount Everest? A few minutes to a half hour, but max. You get up there, your buddy takes a picture of you, buddy gets up there, you take a picture of him, and you're on your way down, and you hope you don't get killed in an avalanche. So if you're going to climb Mount Everest, you better enjoy the weeks and months of acclimatization on Base Camp 1, Base Camp 2, and so on. Same way in life. The destination is a mirage, and in any case, it's out of your control, as we discussed earlier. So pour all of your emotional energy into what are the actions that I have to undertake in order to reach my goal. Invest in the process, not the outcome. And the paradox is, when you invest in the process, not the outcome, you actually begin to enjoy your journey. And paradoxically, the more you detach from the outcome, the higher the likelihood that you will actually reach the outcome you want. John Wooden was the first person to reach the Basketball Hall of Fame, both as a player and as a coach. And he talked about, whenever I work with a new team, I never talked about winning or outscoring opponents. I always talked about when it's over and you look in the mirror, did you do the best you were capable of? If you did the best you were capable of, the score really doesn't matter. But I suspect that if you did the best you were capable of, you'll find the score to your liking. It's a perfect articulation of invest in the process, do not invest in the outcome. There was a wonderful movie called Lone Survivor, and it talked about Operation Red Wing, which was an attempt by, which is a secret attempt by the Navy SEALs in Afghanistan. It's an operation that launched, and it went very badly astray. It was a four-man team who were dropped in Afghanistan behind enemy lines, and they were attacked by dozens of armed Taliban, and three of them were killed immediately, and the fourth, Marcus Luttrell, was badly wounded, had several broken bones, and in that condition, he climbed down a steep mountain, swam an icy river, until he was found by friendly villagers who eventually returned him to the United States Army. And of course, they asked him, how did you manage to survive? And he attributed it to his SEAL team training, and in particular, Hell Week. Hell Week, as the name indicates, is exactly that. It's a week in the training when they have hardly any sleep, and they do stuff like swim miles in the ocean, and then come back and roll on sand, and then run miles with the wet sand, rubbing them raw. They pick up a heavy log and transport it 2 miles, and then take it back to where they picked it up from. They crawl under barbed wire with live fire over them. And as Marcus Luttrell pointed out, when you're in Hell Week, anybody who thinks, oh my God, there's 5 more days of this, drops out. The only people who survive are the people who say, one more step. And he said that is what saved him in Afghanistan, because he was not thinking of his condition. He was not thinking of what could happen. All he was saying is one more step. And this, by the way, is a wonderful way, blueprint to live your life. Whenever you're beset with difficulties, and I strongly doubt you'll be beset with anything like what this gentleman was, all you have to remember is one more step. What is the next step? Einstein said, the most important question you're ever going to ask yourself is the universe friendly? Let me repeat that. Einstein said, the most important question you're ever going to ask yourself is the universe friendly? Most of us believe that the universe is not friendly, is not unfriendly, it's just indifferent. It doesn't know we exist, and it couldn't care less. Here I am going around doing my thing. Here's the universe going around doing its thing. Sometimes it seems to be working for me. Sometimes it seems to be working against me. But essentially, it's a random process. The universe doesn't know I exist and couldn't care less. But what if the universe was not indifferent? What if the universe was aware of your existence? And what if the universe was well disposed towards you? That was Einstein's question. Is the universe friendly? Now, if the universe was friendly, friends don't shaft friends. So why does the universe give you stuff you don't want? You want to be promoted and you get fired, you get a pink slip. You want to have a harmonious partnership and your spouse has just consulted a divorce lawyer. Why does the universe give you stuff you don't want? Well, what if the universe was giving you stuff you don't want, but this is exactly what you needed for your learning and growth? It's like you were a small child and you wanted a tub of ice cream, and your parents gave you fruits and vegetables, and you don't want fruits and vegetables, you want a tub of ice cream. But your parents give you fruits and vegetables. And it isn't until you have a much greater level of maturity and wisdom that you can say, thank God I got fruits and vegetables. What if the universe was like that? It doesn't give you what you want, but it gives you exactly what you need for your learning and growth. Regardless of whether or not the universe is benevolent, if you believe the universe was friendly, your experience of life would be considerably better. That's why no less a personage than Einstein said, the most important question you'll ever ask yourself is the universe friendly? When you live in the friendly universe, your experience of your life changes immensely for the better. And how do you get to viewing the universe as friendly? Look around at the number of times when the universe does behave as if it was friendly. And the more you notice that actively, the more you will come to the point where you can accept that, yes, it is a friendly universe that you live in. And yes, sometimes stuff happens that you would rather not have happened, but they're simply there to help you, to strengthen you as you begin, as you carry on with your journey of life.
Beautiful, Dr. Rao. Do you think this would be a time to answer some questions? I see one in the Q&A.
Absolutely. If you have any, let's do that.
Okay, well, we have a couple in the Q&A. So the first one is, I do enjoy the journey and the flow, but I do not have a goal. So it's opposite from the problem you were describing. So what are affirmations and tools to define destination or to understand what the goal is?
Here is the whole point. If you're truly in the position where you don't feel you need to have a goal, but you're prepared to let life unfold every day in the way it is, then that is absolutely fantastic. I know that this is against conventional wisdom, which says, you know, in order to make the most of your life, you have to have a goal and you have to work single-mindedly towards that. You have to keep the goal in mind. And I am contradicting that. And I'm saying, if you're truly in a position where you let each life unfold and there is no angst in you, no feeling of something is missing and I ought to be doing that, then you're in a very good place. Just continue. You do not need to know where your entire journey goes. The only thing you need to know is what is the next step. Remember, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. All you need to know is what is the next step.
And taking that next step, this is the next question, so kind of feeding into it. So taking that next step, staying on the positive side. Right now, it's a very negative situation with the whole pandemic and everything. So how do you stay on the light side and overcoming those moments when you do feel lost and don't know which
way? This is where it comes down to, Sarah. What happens is we have a vision of the world, and in our view, the world should be unfolding in this manner. As long as you have a vision of the world, even if it's very hazy, even if it's unclear, as long as we have the feeling this is how things should be, it is incumbent upon us to try our level best to make that happen. We may succeed, we may not succeed, it does not matter. We try our level best and invest in the process, not the outcome. Because here is the mistake that most of us make. We think that the benefit of setting a goal and trying our level best to achieve the goal is achieving the goal. Wrong. The benefit of setting a goal and trying our level best to achieve the goal is the learning and growth that happen in us and to us as we try our level best to achieve the goal. If we actually achieve the goal, that's a bonus. Let's be immensely grateful. If you don't achieve the goal, the learning and growth have already happened, so we're ahead of the game. It's a no-lose proposition.
Okay, and there's someone in the main room with a hand raised. Karthik, did you have a question you would like to ask? Let's see, maybe not.
Okay. I can't hear the question.
No? Okay, maybe not. Anita asks, how can I learn to recognize my unhelpful mental models and change them for the better?
Okay, that's a very good question. And one of the problems we have is not only do we, let me back up a little bit. Every time you have a situation in your life that you find unpleasant and it persists, not some of the time, not most of the time, every single time you have a situation in your life that you find unpleasant and it persists, you are using one or more mental models that are not serving you well every time. And the moment you make changes, appropriate changes in those mental models, after you identify them, poof, the situation will go just like that. The problem, as I said earlier, is not only that we have mental models, but in many cases, we are not aware that we have mental models. We think this is the way the world works. So the best way is to actually start working on this with a group of persons close to you. And there are certain parameters for this. These are persons who genuinely wish you well. They would not stab you in the back. They are intelligent and they are themselves on a path of growth, and you can rely on them because they can see your blind spots. So in my book, Are You Ready to Succeed? I describe how you can make a mastermind group of such persons and work on this together, and they will be able to point out to you what you are unable to observe by yourself. And you in turn will do the same for them. So the best way to do it is to form such a small group. And as I said, how you can do this is described in my book, Are You Ready to Succeed? So if this person is interested in that, I would strongly recommend getting a copy of that and working. Next.
Okay, that might answer the continued learning. Do you have online courses? Which we might get to at the end. But another question is, can you provide a strategy that will enable a person to catch the negative and redirect to something?
Yes, absolutely. This is my smartphone, and I'm sure that everybody who's on this call has a smartphone. And here is my alarm, and you can see how many of those I have. I set them up to beep at irregular intervals, and every time it beeps, it's an immediate reminder to me to observe my mental chatter. Most of the time, our problem is we don't observe our mental chatter, we become our mental chatter. And when you're in a position where you can observe your mental chatter, you can see how many of them are second arrows, you can see how many of them are negative, where you beat up on yourself, judge yourself to your detriment with others, you pass judgment on others, and so on. So as you start becoming aware of that and you become a witness to that, you will notice that they have much, much less power over you. So that's a very good beginning.
Okay, did you want to finish this slide? Yes. Some people are saying they can't see.
Then we'll carry on for more questions.
Okay, a couple more minutes here.
This story comes to you from the Native American tradition, and it talks about a young man who is about to take his place among the adults of the tribe. And the final rite of passage was a conversation with the medicine man. And the medicine man tells him, here's this dog, kind, intelligent, loving, trustworthy. And here's this wolf, malevolent, vicious, evil, ready to slash at and kill anything. And the dog and the wolf are fighting. And the dog and the wolf are both inside you. And the young boy asks, which one's going to win? And the medicine man says, whichever ones you feed. Now think about it. Inside each one of us, there are altruistic, let's help each other and make the world a better place impulses. And that each one of us, there are, let me grab everything I can for myself, and the devil take the hindmost impulses. And the two are always fighting. It is your job to selectively identify and feed the dog in yourself. It's also your job to selectively identify and feed the dog in everyone you meet around you. Very often we feed the wolf both in ourselves and the other person, and we don't even recognize we're doing that. Let me give you an example. You're having a bad day at work and you go to grab yourself a cup of coffee and you meet a colleague at the coffee machine and the colleague says, I'm having a bad day at work. And you say, you're having a bad day at work. Let me tell you about my bad day at work. And your bad day at work tops his bad day at work and you walk off feeling smug. You just fed the wolf both in yourself and the other person. If instead you'd gone, you're having a bad day at work, I'm having a bad day at work, what can we do collectively to make sure nobody has such a day again? And now you're starting to feed the dog. In every conversation you have with everyone, with the Uber driver who takes you to the airport, with the DoorDash person who delivers you food, with the person who sells you newspaper, with your partners, with your children, with your colleagues, every conversation you have, every interaction you have, ask yourself, am I feeding the dog or am I feeding the wolf? Am I leaving this person feeling better about himself or herself, more elevated, positive about his or her life and how it's unfolded? Or am I pushing them into a downward spiral? Am I feeding the dog or am I feeding the wolf? And when you do that, you will find that when you're feeding the dogs in others, you're also feeding the dogs in yourself, and your entire experience of life will be greatly improved. And with that, we are done with the concepts. If you like what you heard, you can go to my website and register, and then you'll get my blog and information about my programs. And if you want to have any questions, you can feel free to email me at my email address. It's down there. Just identify yourself when you do that. And I still have time for a couple of questions.
Maybe one more. We do have some closing announcements to make for the next session.
Wonderful.
Okay.
In that case, let me wish everyone an absolutely terrific, terrific day. And it's been my pleasure to be with you today. Bye, everyone.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sri Kumar. I will like to say to everyone, the next presentation on this channel, the Leadership Channel, is a women's leadership panel. So there's going to be four speakers talking about women's leadership. So stay tuned for that. I would like to say that the library, the whole 1,000 presentations, if you would like this presentation, is free for 48 hours. But if you would like it forever, feel free to purchase the package. It's half price during the conference itself, so it allows you to digest it in your own time forever. And that also enables us to pay for the conference and as a thank you for us for hosting the what is technically the largest online event. And I think Sri Kumar is gone. I had one more question for him, but I guess we won't get it. His top tip to stay embodied. So Dr. Rao, are you there? I don't see you. No, I guess not. Okay. Well, everyone, thank you so much for being here. And there's a private Facebook group. It's not private, it's public. The Embodiment Conference Facebook group. Feel free to join that. And this was live streamed on the TEC Leadership and Business Channel group. So you can go back there as well, and we can continue in the chat as well. So see you at the next talk, and have a great rest of the conference, everyone. Thank you. Mm-hmm.